Hi, I'm Shersha Mizan from Hudson. You are listening to WGXC Accra 90.7 FM. Thank you.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Accra, and today on the WGXC Morning Show, we're going to talk live with Laura Churchill, Deputy Director of Public Health and Clinical Services for Greene County Family Planning. We'll also hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And it all begins after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
The network, network, this is the news. This is the news. This is the news. This is the network, network. On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news.
Do you have 17 cents a day to support a platform for many diverse voices to have their say on the local airwaves? Just 17 cents a day, a monthly $5 recurring donation, can help keep local youth on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. Your monthly sustaining support will keep the airwaves full of music from around the world and around the corner. WGXC needs 500 sustaining supporters to make sure there is one spot on the dial where the community can have access to its own airwaves. Make your pledge today at wgxc.org/donate and do your part to protect an important source of local news, information, and entertainment. With just 17 cents a day, you will do your part to protect your favorite frequency. Become a sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org/donate now.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Bindlestiff Family Circus of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
This is Tom Rowe in Accra with the WGXC local news for Wednesday, February 16th. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. Rachel Silberstein is reporting for the Times Union that the Greenville Central School District has endured 3 days of unrest from parents and students over what they call excessive mask enforcement and unequal treatment of students based on vaccination status. Tensions boiled over at a school board meeting on February 14th after approximately 30 students walked out earlier that same day over the mask requirement. On February 15th, school officials announced that grades 6 through 12 would move to remote learning for the rest of the week, citing students' defiance of mask rules and disruptions to the school day. School officials initially refused to begin this board meeting February 14th because several people were unmasked, but eventually they engaged with community members about the scope of their power and explained that the mask requirements are state mandated. During the exchange, at least one parent stood over the board members and berated them. A high school sophomore said she felt singled out by the high school's mask enforcement and resented comments from teachers and administrators about her vaccination status. Teachers allegedly suggested that she staple or duct tape her mask to her nose. Another teacher suggested she was endangering the teacher's baby. The student was among the group of students who walked out of class that day. On February 15th, a large group of students staged an indoor protest, leading to confrontations between pro- and anti-mask students in the hallway. school officials said. Superintendent Tammy Sutherland said she sympathizes with parents whose kids have been masked for nearly 2 years, but her hands are tied. Quote, I do think there is a COVID fatigue, and we are required, as you know, to enforce the mask mandate. Parents do not believe that. They think I have the ability to stop the mask mandate, which I don't, unquote, Sutherland said. Parents asked the board to support their effort to appeal to Governor Kathy Hochul, whose administration dropped the mask mandate for businesses, but not schools last week. They also asked school leaders and teachers to show more kindness and lighten up on mask enforcement. Read more about the story in the Times Union. A group of Ankrum residents, organized as Rural Ankrum, announced last week they have been meeting since November to discuss the scale, scope, and potential impact of the proposed Iron Star Resort, a development on 147 acres of farmland adjacent to the Ankrum Hamlet. A draft plan of the project has been submitted to the Ankrum Planning Board. Many of the critical details have yet to be disclosed, including the number and size of structures, financial stability, economic implications, lighting, water usage, waste, fire, and police needs, and the expected disruptions to ecosystems. Rural Ankrum is an organization with 300-plus online community and a website. The group's mission is to, quote, gather, analyze, and disseminate information on Iron Star and provide the public with details about the resort, unquote. The Iron Star developers plan calls for the construction of cottages, recreational facilities, a full-service hotel, and a restaurant. Quote, Iron Star is far too big for our rural agricultural town and in direct contradiction of our 2019 comprehensive plan, unquote, said resident Mark DeGarmo. Quote, 92% of residents approve the plan, which is the basis for Ankrum's zoning law, unquote. Rural Ankrum asserts that, quote, Iron Star threatens the town's history, agricultural economy, rural aesthetic, and quality of life, unquote. Planning Board is taking public comments in person via Zoom at public meetings, by mail, or by email with comments attached as a separate document. Information is available at rural-ankrum.org. Ariel Zangla is reporting for the Daily Freeman that Ulster County has put its first three electric buses on the road, another step forward in its green fleet policy goal of making 20% of its vehicle fleet electric by 2025, County Executive Pat Ryan said. Quote, the goal we set, which I think we can exceed and we're going to keep pushing on, is to reach 20% of our fleet by 2025, unquote, Ryan said during a press conference February 15th at the Ulster County Area Transit offices. Quote, and just with these three buses, that brings us to 9% already towards that goal, and we have at least nine more buses lined up in the coming years to continue to meet and hopefully exceed that goal that we've set as a county, unquote. As the county's transit buses near the end of their useful life, they will be replaced, with nine more scheduled to be in electric in the coming years, according to Ryan's office. Ryan said three electric buses will be powered with 100% renewable energy. The buses were purchased by Ulster County Area Transit, which was approved for nearly $1 million in funding from the New York Truck Voucher Incentive Program administered by the New York State Energy Research and Development Authority. The New York Power Authority provided the charging infrastructure, and the Ulster County Area Transit Depot was equipped with wiring upgrades to allow for expanded charging and the development of renewable energy technologies. Read more about the story in the Daily Freeman, and read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org.
WGXC welcomes audio responses from listeners. Anyone can call and leave a message with WGXC, and we'll play it on the air. Call 518-291-WGXC and leave up to a 3-minute message for airplay. Hear something you disagree with? Want to speak out on an issue? Plug your band's show? Let your neighbors know something important? Call 518-291-9492 and leave a 3-minute message anytime about any issue. That number again is 518-291-WGXC. 518-291-9492.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Wednesday, February 16th. The early morning temperature range is 13 in Oak Hill, up to 17 in Netherwood. As a warm front moves across the state, there are some flood watches this morning to the north, but it looks like our area will skip the trouble and be dry today, with a high of 42 around 4 p.m. Wind gusts will reach 30 miles per hour. Cars will feel it on the highways. Don't forget, the morning is still holding on to some of that lingering cold, so layer up if going out there. Overnight, temperatures dip just before dark, then increase to 44 degrees by dawn tomorrow. Winds will remain gusty all day. Temperatures top out at 57 degrees. And after 1 p.m., rain begins, and then will get stronger near dark and continue all night. Friday starts out around 46 degrees as the rain tapers off. Then the temperature will drop to 30 degrees by dark, 20 degrees overnight, and then a high of 37 on Saturday with a chance of light snow. Sunday, we're back up to 41 degrees. Sunset today will be at 5:14 p.m. and sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:46 a.m. Looking way up, we see 2 days of geomagnetic quiet is to be expected. An incoming slow plasma stream is due on Sunday. Solar wind speed is currently 373 kilometers per second at 4.5 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 15 megahertz till dark, then good below 8 megahertz and fair for the rest overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is too quiet. The current sunspot number is 73. And this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Friday Night Racer of Hartsdale, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Now to absorb some local color through the magic of AM radio.
The book of Revelations tells us to watch for the seven signs of evil.
Sign of evil number 4.
Continuing our sign of evil countdown, here's Vanessa Williams.
According to the federal government, just over 3.7 million people with disabilities live in New York, and they just got a new advocate in the governor's office. Governor Kathy Hochul has appointed Kimberly Hill the state's first chief disability officer to advance and advocate policies to support New Yorkers with disabilities. Sharon McLennan Weir with the Center for Independence of the Disabled New York says she hopes Hill will focus policy recommendations on a few areas, including transportation, healthcare, housing, education, and job creation.
Preparing people with disabilities to enter the labor market is important, so having that foundational base of education that leads to gainful employment is critical.
The governor's office says only about one-third of New Yorkers with disabilities are employed, and the state ranks 38th in the nation in its employment rate for this group of workers. Through the annual state budget, Hochul is also pushing for $240 million in additional funding for private schools serving children with disabilities. At a news conference this week, Hochul said her 2022-2023 executive budget also calls for tens of thousands of supportive housing units for folks with disabilities as part of her broader $25 billion affordable housing plan.
We need to make sure that we are meeting people where they are. They need to have not just a roof over their head, but a roof over their head and services sometimes that also allow them to excel in that environment.
According to the Federal Bureau of Transportation Statistics, more than 25 million Americans age 5 and older have some form of disability that can limit their ability to travel. McLennan Weir says the chief disability officer is also tasked with removing barriers for those folks.
And having any type of barriers within the transportational system is going to prevent you from doing the basic things like being able to go vote, being able to go to the supermarket to buy food, and being able to get to work on time.
In a written statement, Hill said she's looking forward to, quote, working towards a more integrated, inclusive, and accessible New York, unquote. Hill has held many roles in state government advocating on behalf of New Yorkers with disabilities, most recently with the New York State Assembly's Standing Committee on People with Disabilities. For the New York News Connection, I'm Jonah Chester. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGXC 90.7 FM.
I'm Tom Rowe with the WGXC News Update. Go to the WGXC Newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about any of these stories. Diane Panera Zucker reports in the Daily Freeman that reaction continues from the rally of a dozen racists February 11th in Woodstock. The group from White Lives Matter New York gathered for about an hour when they became outnumbered by police and counter-protesters. The Reverend Carrie Patterson said she wasn't clear whether they left, quote, because they were asked to leave or because they were quickly being outnumbered by ad hoc counter-protesters, unquote. The racists were on the Village Green, owned by Patterson's Woodstock Reformed Church. The racists, who covered their faces, did not get permission from the church to use their property. Patterson says religious leaders in Woodstock held a prayer service, and the church will post banners in the churchyard, quote, just to say that hate is not welcome here and love your neighbor, no exceptions, unquote. In addition to those, quote, visual token efforts, unquote, Patterson said, quote, we're really brainstorming and praying and talking together and joining with anti-racist initiatives, unquote, in Ulster County. Meanwhile, on February 14th, the Woodstock Town Board and Human Rights Commission condemned the White Lives Matter group's rally. Quote, on February 11th, 2022, a group of white supremacists stood on our Village Green to spew hateful, vile, and intolerant messages. Hate has no home here and never will. Do not fear those who seek to spread hate. Let them be on notice that attempts at division will not succeed in our community as such messages ring hollow. In Woodstock, all who coexist with love, compassion, acceptance, and understanding are welcome, unquote. The New York chapter of the hate group White Lives Matter has been active in the area lately. They held a banner January 14th in front of the gazebo in the park in Chatham. The group has been recently placing recruitment stickers on park benches, parking meters, utility poles, and road signs in Hudson and Stockport, and have posted a video of a meetup in North Greenbush. The Southern Poverty Law Center, which tracks hate groups nationally, says the White Lives Matter group first formed in Texas about 7 years ago by leaders associated with neo-Nazi groups. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. Roger Hannigan Gilson reports in the Times Union that Columbia County District Attorney Paul Shaka won't reinstate the top charges in the beating of a Kinderhook man involving two law enforcement officers after a judge dismissed the charges late last year. Columbia County Sheriff's Deputy Kelly Rosenstrock, her husband Alex, IRS agent Brian Hogg, and Corey Gaylord, a contractor, were indicted on gang assault, unlawful imprisonment, and other charges in October 2020. But they now only face unlawful imprisonment in a case where Harold Handy was beaten almost to death. Handy underwent surgery to have a plate inserted in his face to help repair two fractured bones. But Chaika did not present medical records or details about the alleged operation, and Columbia County Judge Richard Kowiek dropped many of the charges, saying in part that prosecutors failed to show, quote, a serious physical injury, unquote, to Handy. The man was beaten at a July 4, 2020 party hosted by Columbia County Sheriff's Deputy Kelly Rosenstrock and attended by many law enforcement officers. Handy was assaulted multiple times, and then party attendees kept him from leaving, according to the indictment. His wife, who was at the party, was also told by law enforcement officials not to leave or call 911, according to Kowiek's decision. At first, the case was handled by the Columbia County Sheriff's Office, but the four suspects were not charged for more than 3 months, and the state police took over the investigation during that time. Alex Rosenstrock was the largest contributor to then-Sheriff David Bartlett's political campaign. Bartlett lost his attempt at re-election in last fall's election to one of his deputies, Don Croft. Read more about the story in the Times Union. New York's Department of Environmental Conservation is giving away tree and shrub seedlings for planting near streams, rivers, or lakes to help stabilize banks, protect water quality, and improve wildlife habitat. Quote, small-scale streamside plantings can help decrease erosion, slow floodwaters, and protect fish and wildlife habitat, unquote, said DEC Commissioner Basil Sagos. Quote, we encourage New York landowners with waterside properties to participate in DEC's Buffer in the Bag program to bolster our efforts to protect water quality and safeguard communities from flooding, unquote. Landowners must have property in New York State with at least 50 feet bordering a stream, river, or lake and provide photos or a map of the planting location to get the seedlings. Previous recipients are encouraged to reapply. Applicants are eligible for one bag of 25 seedlings, and recipients are chosen on a first-come, first-served basis. The Hudson River Estuary Program offers additional assistance with streamside planting projects. More information is available at the Department of Environmental Conservation website with a link on the WGXC newsroom. You can find out more information about all these stories at wgxc.org in that WGXC newsroom.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
If Russia decides to invade, that would also have consequences here at home. But the American people understand that defending democracy and liberty is never without cost.
President Joe Biden said diplomacy with Russia should be given a chance, but he noted that the U.S. won't compromise on Ukraine's territorial integrity. Russia announced it's pulling back some of its troops from military exercises, but some observers noted that the retreating units already were far from the Ukraine border. The House January 6 committee subpoenaed two members of the Trump campaign and four prominent Republican officials from battleground states. The panel is seeking details about alleged efforts to send false electors to change the outcome of the 2020 presidential election. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer wants to force an initial vote on taking up the short-term funding bill as soon as Thursday. In exchange, Republicans are pushing for amendment votes on vaccine mandates and a balanced budget. The Department of Health and Human Services is requesting at least $30 billion for continued COVID-19 response efforts, but some lawmakers question additional funding, arguing that the multiple rounds already released have contributed to rising inflation. Here's South Dakota Republican Senator John Thune.
The definition of inflation is too many dollars chasing too few goods and services. And that's exactly the situation Democrats helped create with their so-called American Rescue Plan. They sent too many dollars into the economy, and the economy overheated.
Republicans prevented votes on five of Biden's Federal Reserve nominees with the goal of specifically blocking the nomination of Sarah Bloom Raskin. They questioned her past statements expressing support for using financial rules to police climate change. Senate Banking Committee Chair Sherrod Brown blasted all of the 12 Republicans who boycotted the vote.
Let me be clear, Ms. Bloom Raskin has been the subject of an unrelenting smear campaign in fear-mongering by the ranking member and Republicans.
Despite concerns about his ties to the pharmaceutical industry, the Senate confirmed Robert Califf as the next FDA commissioner, with six Republicans in favor and five Democrats against. Remington Arms agreed to settle liability claims from nine families of Sandy Hook shooting victims who argued the firearm used was marketed to younger, at-risk males. Nicole Hockley lost her son Dylan and says the lawsuit is part of her pledge to prevent future gun violence.
Nothing will bring Dylan back. The closest I get to him now is by kissing his urn every night, telling him I love him and I miss him. But I made him a promise, and I'll keep working to deliver that promise for the rest of my life.
This is the first time a gun manufacturer has been held responsible for a mass shooting. Police have identified a Louisville activist as a suspect in an attempted shooting of mayoral candidate Craig Greenberg. 21-year-old Quintez Brown pleaded not guilty Tuesday to attempted murder. Investigators reportedly are looking into his ties with racial justice groups. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our eight trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
We'll be right back. more. We got a lot more. We got a lot more.
Whoops, that was Duke Ellington there, and you're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM. And I'm Tom Rowe here live in Acre, where it's just about to get above 30 degrees and stay there, at least during the day. It'll be above 30 for a week or two, it looks like, with some 40s and 50s coming. Maybe that sleet snow bomb or whatever thing that's still on the ground will be gone soon. Hopefully. But now we have are joined by a special guest here. We have on the phone Laura Churchill, the Deputy Director of Public Health and Clinical Services for Greene County Family Planning. Laura, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good morning. Thank you for having me this morning.
Good morning, too. Give our listeners a little overview of what Greene County Family Planning does.
So we are a publicly funded family planning clinic located in the Greene County Health Department and the Public Health Department in the town of Greene, and we are a unique model of care at this point in history. There are only 5 health departments in New York State that have family planning services offered as a direct offering of service. So we're kind of a little bit of a unique model here. We also are the county's STD clinic, so folks that have a need for testing and treatment for sexually transmitted infections, as well as reproductive health, can access our services.
And what are you sort of focusing on at this point?
So each month there are topics that have been decided upon that are a focus of health-related issues, and this week in particular is National Condom Week, which always gives everybody a chuckle that we have a National Condom Week, but we do. And as a result of that, we sort of promote the opportunity to get free condoms here in the clinic, and also actually at the back door of the county building, there is a access point right by the Department of Social Services where we have little white boxes like you would pick up your Chinese food in, and they're relabeled condom scents, and we have boxes of 12 free condoms at the back door. So we tried during the pandemic to figure out how to get condoms in the hands of people. Prior to that, folks would have to come up to the office and just request free condoms, which are still available at our office, but we tried to figure out how to make it a little bit easier. So we are promoting the opportunity to use condoms to have safer relationships, reduce the spread of STDs, and prevent unintended pregnancy.
And how bad are those problems these days, do you think?
Well, you know, that's a great question. It is amazing how much we have made progress over the years in terms of things like teen pregnancy. So, for example, the teen pregnancy rate for Greene County in 2011 through 13 was 19.5 per 1,000 births, and now it is 10.9 per 1,000 births. That's a little bit dated information. That last statistic comes from 2018. And the New York State average is 23.9, so we're lower than the New York State average for teen pregnancy rates. And so I like to think that the county having a health department with family planning in it does contribute to the access point for teenagers to have healthier behaviors, whether it's being abstinent, whether it's using protection or accessing long-acting reversible contraceptives. I feel like, you know, the teens make the best decisions when they have the most information.
And do you think they get enough information, or do they need more?
Well, I think that it depends on, you know, where they are in their life. I know that we have a health educator that goes into the majority of the schools in Greene County, both some in the middle school level and then the high school level. And we have a 5-day program that focuses on healthy relationships and primarily abstinence as a primary method of managing one's sexuality, but also offering the tools and the information to young people so that if and when they become sexually active, they make good decisions around protecting themselves from pregnancy as well as sexually transmitted infections. I will say that we have seen a drop-off in the number of minors accessing our services during the pandemic, and that doesn't, I think, come as a surprise to most people listening, because teenagers certainly have been home. They've been not necessarily attending school, and their parents probably have a greater awareness of where they are during the day. And that's been a concern to us. We've heard some anecdotal reports of teen pregnancies in the high schools around us, and so we continue to offer to provide educational services as well as, you know, have an access place for teens to come.
Yeah, I can.
Every Wednesday evening from 3 to 6, we have what's called a teen walk-in time. So minors can come in, just walk in, and they don't need an appointment. They can just kind of come to the clinic and walk in, and that's something that we have on our website and promote each week as well.
Yeah, it would seem like your job is mostly about kind of outreach, and that's the toughest thing to do during the pandemic.
Yeah, it sure is. Some of the strategies that we try to do to increase the access for folks is that we adopted telemedicine. Prior to the pandemic, we had discussed the idea of doing telemedicine, but by the end of March in 2020, we had figured out a way to get it moving, and now we do have folks that do access our services via telemedicine platform. And that's been a wonderful thing for everybody involved. There are certainly things that can't happen via telemedicine, but to the extent that it's possible, we do offer it. We also started offering online scheduling this year so that if somebody, you know, is on a Saturday night and thinks, hey, you know what, I want to get a pap smear or a breast exam or I need to get tested, they could sit on their computer and look up our website and make an appointment and not have to go through thinking about Monday morning at 8:30 when the clinic opens, making that phone call.
Hmm.
So in those ways, the pandemic has forced us to think a little bit more outside the box about how we can help folks access healthcare services.
Yeah, it seems like that's great and great information, but it's hard to get that information to the people that most need it. And sometimes the people that most need it don't have internet or computer access to get that too, right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That is definitely a struggle, especially with Greene County and having the – I know that the legislature is working hard on improving the access to high-speed internet throughout the county, and that will make a big difference. But transportation is another problem, too, for folks just getting down off the mountaintop or coming to us from some of the more remote areas of the county. They don't have a car. It's hard to get here. There is Medicaid transportation, and there is a bus service that the county runs, but it certainly doesn't meet the needs of folks that need it the most. And that is one of the things that we do receive state funding to provide services to the most vulnerable in the population, so those people that are at or below the federal poverty level. Minors, people under the age of 24, those are particular groups that we have been tasked to provide services to and to promote our services to.
Hmm. I always like to ask people who aren't, you know, you don't have a direct internet job, but your job, it would be easier if Greene County had better internet. I always point out at this point in the conversation that Democratic and Republican Congress people, the entire time I've been in Greene County, which is 15 or 20 years, have been espousing, oh, we're going to get broadband internet. We're going to get broadband internet. They keep promising that we're going to get widespread. Do you think internet is actually getting any better in the time that you've been doing this job?
I do think it is getting better. And I think that the ability for even, folks to have iPhones where they could have, you know, that I think the technology has changed so that there's both the increased access to internet and also the technology that allows somebody to sit in their car on their phone and make a visit with me as opposed to a plug-in desktop computer that they had to sit at to perform or to conduct a telemedicine visit. So I think things are improving. I live in really southern rural Albany County, and we now have high-speed internet, and that I never imagined that would happen in my lifetime. So, I do think that things are improving. And things like the pandemic, as difficult as they've been, have really pushed these issues over the edge. And so we can be grateful, at least, to those aspects of the pandemic that have forced us to change and adapt a little bit.
Yeah, I was imagining that going through this pandemic for you without internet, if it was, 20 or 30 years ago, would be much more difficult.
Yeah, it certainly would be.
So what else are you focusing on in February?
So February National Teen Violence Prevention. And so one of the difficulties of operating a clinic that provides sexual health services is that we do interact with far too many women who have been the victims of sexual violence, and we have the ability to counsel them and to connect them to services for both post-intervention for either sexual violence or in a prevention strategy. So that's one of the things that our health educator does talk about when she interacts with teenagers in the community and also in the schools, is how to prevent teen violence, how to be aware of it, and really kind of promoting healthy relationships.
And has that problem gotten any better or worse during the pandemic?
I think that I know that it has gotten worse. People have had, been in close proximity with each other and over time, and I think that that has difficulties people have with relationships, and they're in close proximity, and I think the statistics are borne out that there have been increased rates of domestic violence calls through the sheriff's office and various things. But we are fortunate in Greene County to have a mobile crisis assessment team. So for all your listeners out there, one of the things that we have in this county that we are so fortunate to have is a crisis assessment team that you can call anywhere that you live in Greene County, and you can have them access, they can come to your house or provide services on the phone. And that's one of the things that we try and offer to people that are in difficult relationships, or the resources that we do have to help them manage those difficult times.
What else was I going to ask? I had a question and I lost it now. I'm sorry.
I do also say, we do provide, I think one of the things that happens with reproductive health is it kind of gets labeled as, we kind of have stereotypes of what we do and don't provide. But one of the things that I want your listeners to know is that Greene County Family Planning is what is considered a safety net clinic, meaning that folks can come through the doors whether they have insurance or not. We have somebody here that navigates them and can literally sign them up for health insurance that day, whether it's through the exchange or through a healthcare plan. We also are an opportunity for folks to get to higher levels of care. So over the years, I've been here 18 years, I've seen so many opportunities that people come in with a reproductive health issue, but it turns out they also have cancer or blood pressure issue or high cholesterol or diabetes or some other problem. And those folks are kind of guided through the healthcare system to have better health outcomes and improve their ability to have healthy, productive lives, which at the end of the day is what we all want.
And if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Laura Churchill, the Deputy Director of Public Health and Clinical Services for Greene County Family Planning, and talking about how it's National Condom Week. And what did you say the month was?
The month is Teen Violence Prevention.
And boy, Greene County is lucky to have this sort of service here, isn't it?
Well, I would like to think so. I think that we feel that we can look at the taxpayers in this county and help them understand why we take the money that we have and why we provide the services that we do. And at the end of the day, the most vulnerable people in our county, I hope, are being offered the opportunity to have services that they need to be healthy and stay healthy.
Has the pandemic impacted you in other ways? This part of the pandemic is about the supply chain issues. Is that causing some weird situation locally?
I mean, the only thing we've had some trouble getting is there was a particular N95 mask that for a while we were unable to secure. So we do have requirements to provide safety equipment to our staff interacting with clients, and that was, I think, the only thing I can think of. And there was a particular lab test that I think was difficult at one point, but we're now, it was a collection device to test for sexually transmitted infections. And there was a point during the pandemic where those were running in short supply. We could only get a few at a time, but that is better now.
And this isn't pandemic related, but Greene County is, any health issue is a little bit difficult here because there's not a hospital. And the hospital across the river has stopped doing births, so that seems to be a difficult spot for you.
It is, and it's one of the reasons that we are happy to be here is to provide an access point for pregnant women to enter into prenatal care. One of the indicators, the state measures lots of indicators over time. For example, the premature birth rate, the low birth weight, and late prenatal care. And one of the concerns always when you have less resources is that folks don't access prenatal care as early or they don't stay with it as long. And so the end result is that you have babies that are born too early or at too low a birth weight. So we do provide pregnancy testing and counseling and help women connect to services to provide optimal birth outcomes.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. The trips to the hospital, the doctor before you give birth, some people might be doing one or two less of those if they have to travel 45 minutes or an hour and a half.
Yeah, and another opportunity that we see here too in the clinic is to what's called preconception counseling. So this is helping women of reproductive age and men actually between and before pregnancies adopt healthier behaviors. Green County has a pretty high rate of smoking. So we have 18% of our folks that smoke, and that's higher than the state average. So when we see folks, even though we're a reproductive clinic, if you're a smoker, I'm certainly going to offer you the opportunity to help you reduce your smoking or quit it entirely so that when and if you become pregnant, you have a healthier birth, birth plan and birth outcome.
And have you seen any impacts of I thought one of the impacts of the Columbia Memorial not doing birthing anymore was that home births would be a little more risky in this area. As I understand it, if you do a home birth, the local hospital is your backup plan. And if your backup plan is now farther away, it seems more difficult.
You know, I can't speak to the issues related to home births. I don't have any information about that. But one of the measures that we do look at is the breastfeeding rates. And when the breast, so we monitor those babies that are born in the local hospitals. We can see the birth certificates here at the county level. And we do see a decrease in the number of reports of breastfeeding at the time of hospital discharge. And I don't know why that would happen because I think the state has strong supports around breastfeeding. I'm not sure why, you know, not having the hospital doing birth deliveries anymore at CMH would impact that, but we have seen a reduction in those rates of breastfeeding. We do have a breastfeeding coalition here that works with providers in the area and also outreaches to pregnant women, and so it is one of the things that we do try and promote is breastfeeding for healthy, for everyone involved. It's just a really healthy way of maintaining a child's health and mom's as well.
And you may not be able to answer this, but you may have some at least anecdotal data on this. But are you seeing that people are going to the hospital or the doctor less because of the pandemic and the impacts of that?
I think in the beginning of the pandemic, we definitely saw that people were afraid, and you know they were encouraged really not to come, and healthcare systems weren't necessarily ready for them, and then. Most recently, the impacts, I think, have been on those procedures that are considered elective. So, for example, some of the women I might have referred to have a tubal ligation or other elective procedures were put on hold because of the increase in the cases of COVID over the winter months most recently.
And another question you may not be able to address, but are the stress on healthcare workers, is that impacting the services that people get?
I can only speak to what we have been doing here, which is that we've been open and available to the community from the beginning. I think everyone has been impacted by the pandemic. Healthcare workers, I think, are disproportionately, you know, have to show up to work. We don't have necessarily always the luxury of being at home and being safe. So I think probably that additional stress has definitely been borne out by at least my coworkers here and other health departments across the state for sure.
And now I've realized what that question was I was going to ask before. It was just that And here's why I lost the question is because I think isn't just everybody's mental health a little strained these days? Certainly mine is.
Yeah, for sure. I think mental health is one of those things that maybe we're talking more about because of the pandemic, because people have had increased rates of isolation and depression, and especially this last wave of COVID hitting during the darker months in the upstate New York area. Mental health is definitely something we need to be and should be talking about, and putting it up there with our physical health is something to take care of. And we actually do depression screenings on all of our patients that come through the door so that we have a sense of whether or not they're experiencing depression and we can help connect them to services.
Yeah, and all the factors that you mentioned, and then there's this politicization of the pandemic on top of it. I mean, we had 3 days or several days this week when the Greenville students were and teachers and all were yelling at each other about putting on a mask or not putting on a mask, or it's just, and that gets played out in local restaurants and sidewalks and all kinds of places. It's just, I don't know how we're going to get out of all this. But the pandemic is got to end at some point, or at least become a new normality at some point. Have we covered everything that you guys are focusing on this month, or have we left anything out?
Yeah, I think we've covered everything that we had talked about for this month, and I really want to thank you for taking the time to talk to me and hopefully give folks an opportunity to hear more about our services. There's one additional thing that we started providing a couple of years ago in response to community need, and that is to prescribe medication-assisted treatment for folks who have opioid use disorder. In that same vein of being an opportunity or a low-threshold clinic for healthcare problems, this is one that we were identifying in the community that just wasn't being met. It wasn't as though we had decided someday this is, a dream that we wanted to do. It was really meeting a direct need of folks that have this need. So we have been additionally offering medication-assisted treatment in the clinic to folks that are our patients and those that seek those services. And I do believe that that has contributed to an overall health improvement in our community and certainly for women of reproductive age.
All right, we've been chatting with Laura Churchill, the Deputy Director of Public Health and Clinical Services for Greene County Family Planning. Can you give us some contact information about how, if you need free condoms, you can get them, how you can call and get your other services from you?
So if you go on the county's website, discovergreen.com, and click on the family planning link, you can make a telemedicine appointment, you can do an online appointment, or you can call our offices at 518-719-3580 to make an appointment or to receive any information or to make an appointment to have our health educator come out to your community. I know we've had our community, she represents lots of organizations and has provided services in education and outreach.
All right. Well, thank you, Laura Churchill, for giving all this vital community information out. And hopefully we can get some of those percentage numbers that you talked about earlier down a little bit in Greene County and everybody a little healthier.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. You have a great day.
All right. Thank you, Laura. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM.
141, they put their long red flannels on. The Irishmen put their flannels on to work in the bluestone quarry. Tillery, irie, orie, tillery, irie, orie, tillery, irie, orie, to work in the bluestone quarry. They left old Ireland far behind to search for work of another kind. The job was hard, but they didn't mind a work in the bluestone quarry. They brought their jigs and songs a cheer, wild ghost stories a liking for beer, and the finest brogue a man could hear while working in the quarry. Tillery, irie, orie, tillery, irie, orie, tillery, irie, orie, while working in the quarry. On the company houses that they lived in, the siding was so terrible thin. All over the place the wind got in when it howled around the quarry. And when they lay them down to sleep, the wiry bugs about did creep, and the rattlesnakes did slither and peep beneath the curb in the quarry. Tillery, irie, orie, tillery, irie, orie, tillery, irie, orie, beneath the curb in the quarry. The Irishman would sometimes moan, sure the devil himself is in that bluestone, for they'd often be nursing a broken bone they got while working the quarry. 'Twas Mike do this and Tim do that, with never a thought for poor old Pat, and him with nothing but an old felt hat to keep out the spots of the quarry. Tillery, irie, orie, tillery, irie, orie, tillery, irie, orie, to keep out the spots of the quarry. Tim Murphy and his strikers true were drilling a hole in the stone so blue. They went for lunch when the whistle blew and left the drill in the quarry. When they returned at 12:45, the drill was nowhere under the sun, but deep in the hole where they'd begun, a blast was shaking the quarry. When they peered in the hole, it gave them a chill, for there was the devil a-working the drill. If you listen real hard, you can hear him there still, a-working the bluestone quarry. Tillery, irie, orie, tillery, irie, orie, tillery, irie, orie, a-working the bluestone quarry.
Barbara Moncure on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM. With some old Greene County music there. Before that, we heard from the Flaming Lips on the WGXC Morning Show, which is coming to an end now. We're turning it over to the Synth Eclectico show, which is next. And then at 11 a.m., we'll be live with Mayuka Fujina's new show, Mirage Station, on the radio at WGXC. She's from Saugerties. And then the Driftless Turmoil show comes on at noon. And we've got all kinds of live special programming tonight. The WGXC afternoon show will discuss the Super Bowl halftime show and other issues today from 4 to 6 p.m. live from Hudson. 7 p.m. we're live from